Understanding, that's the part of it. I'm Richard Dugan. Welcome to another edition of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, bringing you choices and knowledge of those choices to help your dreams to come to fruition. And once you've had one dream and you liked how it turned out so much, you're going to want to have another and another. You just cannot have one. That's not exactly the phrase, but nonetheless, you get my point. We're here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m., and it's 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and we come your way via the internet as well. We stream live. If you'd like to give us a call today, love to have your phone calls and comments with our guest, who I'll be introducing in just a moment. Our number is 866-564-1290 if you're listening on the net. And if you're here on the Central Coast, it's 805-564-1290, 805-564-1290. You can go to richarddugan.com. That's RichardDugan.com. And we're streaming live. Just click on the big Listen Live link. You can't miss it. I made it big enough even for me to find. So you can listen to the program. And they're also archived. So following this broadcast, this program will be available for you online. Today we are going to have on our program a gentleman who has, we're going to start out by talking about with a PBS special called The Journey to Greatness. It's also a book. My guest is Noah Benchia. And Noah, I want to welcome you to our program. We're going to give all the wonderful elements of your history and background in just a moment, but it's great to have you in studio.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here.
I love having guests in studio. There's just such a wonderful rapport that begins to grow. The energy is so much nicer in that regard.
I think you get actually person to person. That makes all the difference.
In addition to the book and the public television special, The Journey to Greatness, you have appeared for some who are really watching. You have appeared on Starbucks coffee cups.
Yeah.
If they're really watching, because a lot of people will just buy the coffee and drink it and throw it away.
Well, it's a great story behind this invitation to be on the Starbucks coffee cup, because when they came to me and asked me about doing this, I wasn't sure I wanted to be on a coffee cup. Frankly, I come from a fairly rigorous academic background, and so I asked a friend of mine's wife what she thought about this, and I hold her opinion in high regard. And she asked me, well, what's the quote? And I said, it's taken from this book of mine called Remember This, My Children, What You Want Your Children to Remember When You're Not Around to Remind Them. And the book was highly honored by the publishing industry. And the quote in the book was, do not kiss your children so they will kiss you back, but so they will kiss their children and their children's children.
Mm.
And she said to me, well, how many cups are you going to be on? Well, as it turned on, it was probably the most successful of the cups in that program. It was about 30 million Starbucks cups. So she said to me, you know, Noah, if that line, do not kiss your children so they will kiss you back, but so they will kiss their children and their children's children, is on 30 million Starbucks coffee cups, and one out of every 100 person who reads that cup kisses a kid, then 300,000 kids are going to get kissed. And I thought to myself, now that's a good day's work.
Absolutely. That's what I call spreading the word.
You know, Scripture reminds us we're not expected to finish the work, but neither are we excused from it.
That's
so
right.
You put the energy out there.
But you were also a Pulitzer Prize nominee.
Yes, and came from a series for about 5 years when the news press here in Santa Barbara was owned by the New York Times. For 5 years, I wrote a weekly column for a regional New York Times syndicate. And the first year, my column was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. And the quote from that book, Remember This, My Children, happened to be one of the columns that ran a couple of years later in the news press. So I'm deeply honored by that. I'm a kid from the other side of the tracks, from real blue-collar background, and being nominated for a Pulitzer or having my work published by Oxford University Press or some of the other things, an address at the Library of Congress. I share that with you because there's always somebody else listening who's not so sure where they might yet go in their life. And I can assure you that I could not have dreamed that these things were going to unfold in my life when I was a kid. It was well beyond what my vision, offered me.
Well, I have no idea what's ahead of us in this next hour program, but I'm very excited about having you on the program and talking more about all of these things. You've written, 22 books?
Well, every author has written more books than he's had published, but I've been fortunate. I've had 22 books published, translated into 18 languages, and have been a best-selling author both in this country and in a number of other countries.
Now, you have been, if I can put it in this context, you have been in the inspirational and motivational realm, if you will, for how many years?
Well, I've been writing now for almost 40 years. It was funny. I was at one of these calm luncheons we have here for celebrity author luncheons, and mm-hmm. somebody asked me, how long does it take you to write one of those columns that they were used to reading? And I said, well, it usually takes me about 15 hours. And the guy said, really? Because when I read it, it seems to flow so smoothly. I said, oh, that part took 35 years. You know, so I've done it more. If you had asked my son when he was young what his father does, he would say, my father types.
If we only we could get paid by the keystroke.
But I don't. You know, I think inspiration is a fair description, but also my work has been a commentary on scriptural literature. It has been straight ahead. Some pretty interesting reflective ideas about philosophy and psychology as well. I'm just interested in folks. And perhaps my best-selling books were three books in a Jacob the Baker series, mm-hmm. which, while they might have an inspiring quality, are more to tell a tale about that there are great, wise people around us who we might stop and take the time to meet.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the people that you've met. We're going to talk about the journey to greatness, and we're also going to talk about the 10 tips for tough times, because a lot of people feel that's where we are. And so we're going to go through a few of those and describe some of those. My guest is Noah Ben-Shea, and he is the author of both the book, The Journey to Greatness, but he's also, I don't know that we'd necessarily say the star of, but well, you are the presenter, if you will.
It was the Noah Ben-Shea Journey to Greatness special, yeah. Played in about 150 cities across North America, and is now replaying in June again.
I think what I liked most was the three doors, the blue, the red, and the green door. Those got my attention more than anything else.
Well, those are the doors on honesty, love, and faith. Because you couldn't go everything in the PBS special. It's only about an hour. The book goes into all those chapters. But those three issues, honesty, love, and faith, play behind the scenes in all of our lives, no matter what scene we think we're playing.
And we're going to go into those in more detail, walk through each one of those doorways, and talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. Through Angel Healing House, I can help you release emotional issues and physical ailments and finally find your inner strength to regain health, clarity, and balance in your life. Find your joy again by booking your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Dim all the lights. Here she comes. Donna Summer. Live, June 25th, 8 p.m., the Shumash Casino Resort. Stamp Your Feet Tour. The Queen is back. An evening with Donna Summer. Live. Dance music's greatest diva, Donna Summer. Reserved seat tickets are on sale now at the Shumash Casino box office, shumashcasino.com, and 1-800-585-3737. An evening with Donna Summer, live, June 25th, 8 p.m., the Shumash Casino Resort. Reserved seat tickets are on sale now.
Have you ever dreamed of being a travel journalist? Well, now you have a chance by making a video of your summer trip and submitting it to Around the World, the award-winning travel radio show. Just send in your video of 2.5 minutes or less, and the Around the World team will select winners to be aired on the show. Go to aroundtheworldradio.com for the rules and listen to Around the World every Thursday at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. and Saturdays at 10 a.m. for more information.
Yes, and I do know how you feel.
And I will do just that, my very best. We'll talk it through back and forth until we have a clear understanding of where we're both coming from. And to quote one of my previous guests, that is what it's all about in terms of averting and staving off conflicts and wars, is sitting down with people and conversing. It's kind of tough to go fight against a friend. Very, very difficult. So that's what we're here to do, to try to bridge that gap, to bring some understanding to the world, to ourselves as well. I'm still a work in progress as well. So we're here with Noah Benchia, the author of The Journey to Greatness, as well as the PBS special. We're also going to be talking about, I think, some really interesting tips, 10 tips for tough times. As a matter of fact, in light of the piece of music that just flew by, and if I can scan down this list here, and of course you'll probably be able to jump on it right away, having to do with fear. Here it is. Put your faith and not your fears in charge. Let's talk a little bit about that, because a lot of people right now are very, very fearful. They don't know what's coming. And yet, by the same token, even if the times were good economically and so forth, we still don't know what's coming.
No, and if you look under our clothing, none of us have a big S for Superman or Superwoman. All of us have a large V for vulnerable. But in these times, particularly these times, people feel very fearful. But let me share a metaphor that perhaps might be an ally to folks who are listening. Imagine that everything that you had, everything that you represent, everything that you know as you, was in some wagon, and you had to pull this wagon in your life. To pull this wagon, you have 12 horses, but because all of us have many more fears than faith, all of us have many more fears than faith. Let's say you have 11 horses of fear and only one horse of faith. If you put any of the horses of fear at the front of that wagon team, the horse will be, well, my mother told me I couldn't do it. My father said I didn't get it. My second wife said this. My children, and the wagon's going nowhere. But if you put the single horse of faith at the head of the team, the horses of fear will follow. Your fears will be strength for your faith if you put your faith and not your fears in charge.
Tell me, what is the difference in your mind between faith and hope?
Well, that's a great question, because it seems to me that hope is the attitude that you might strike in order to achieve faith. Because at the end of the day, faith is not a reasoned argument. Faith is, to borrow from Kierkegaard, it is a leap of faith. So hope will take you to the lip of the chasm, but faith will get you to make the leap. And there's a big difference. You can hope that there is a divinity, but to have a faith in the divinity is something else. You can hope that the universe has room for you, but to have faith that the universe not only has room for you, but that you play a sacred integral role in the universe is a very different relationship.
And how does belief play into that?
Well, you know, one time I was talking to somebody. This is a fair question, Richard. You know, one of the things they say about a philosopher, it's not a philosopher's job to make simple things difficult, but difficult things simple. So I think that belief is, if you will, might be a hope that's gone to college.
Okay. Now, you are both a poet and a philosopher.
Yes, although, every time, and one of the things Larry King has a comment, talks about me being a compass because I've helped so many people to find their way. On the other hand, when I can't find my way from the parking lot back to our hotel room, my wife always says, the compass strikes again. So every time I get lost. So, the responsibility in life is, to take our work seriously and not to take ourselves too seriously.
In this particular period of time in which we live, there are a lot of people who were born and raised in a particular belief system, a particular faith or religion, if you will. Mm-hmm. And as they have grown up, as have I, we have moved into different phases of our beliefs, of our spirituality and so forth. What about you? Where do your roots come from?
Well, let me just go back to your statement for a second, and then go forward, if I might. I think it's Sartre who reminds us that life is lived forwards and understood backwards. But let me go mm-hmm. backwards. I think that every thing we know in life is in a state of transition. Marcel Proust says that all of our final decisions are made in states of mind that do not last. So we're all in a state of transition. So whether you're talking about your faith in an individual, or your faith in a God, or your faith in mammon, or in prosperity, however you choose, that's going to shift across time. You know, the old rock and rollers remind us, oh, if only I knew now what I thought I knew then.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all in a state of transition. The only time that things look like they're straight is when you stand right next to them. Every line extended into space will curve. That's just a fact of physics. So we're all on this great curving arc across time. We're all in a state of gestation. Over every finish line in life are the words begin. Here. So every belief system that we have, if we are or know ourselves to be alive, because the old line is, you know, what isn't moving forward is dying.
Mm-hmm.
So that we know that our opinions are in a state of transition. And that also means that we don't get so locked into being right. Because if you know your opinions are in a state of transition, the things that you are right about, or you spent time needing to be right about, or you spent time needing others to be wrong about, are a waste of time. And that, to me, is the highest form of cosmic littering. In my own faith structure, to go back to your question, I am Jewish. I was born in a more of an ethically than religiously centered home. I had probably more connection through prayer and religion than my parents had. I always just felt myself in some relationship, connection to a spiritual force, which I couldn't define or understood when I was a child, and it was difficult. And I also was raised in some neighborhoods that you really didn't talk about this stuff very much.
Mm-hmm.
Across time, I became very interested in Eastern religions, and became then a professor teaching about Eastern religions, and then came back and began writing commentary about scriptural literature. So I've spent a number of years in those areas, and just have a deeply profoundly important spiritual life. Prayer is a huge part of my life. If I suggest to people, put your faith and not your fears in charge, one of the ways to do that in my line is that prayer is a path where there is none. It has played that role in my life, that prayer is a path where there is none. That being said, there's a guy in Chicago, Roy Leonard, is a big radio personality in the Midwest, and radio is big in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been chosen Catholic Man of the Year a number of years back, and he wrote me, wanted to take some lines of mine from my book, Jacob the Baker, to put in his speech, and then he had me on the show. So while I was on the show, he said to me, he said, you never mentioned any specific religion in your books. I said, no, because when I'm in the middle of prayer, I'm not thinking about what religion I am and the person next to me isn't. That's something that happens when you fall out of prayer, it seems to me. We're on the show. Some woman calls in and she says, coos into the micro. And she said, I can tell just from listening to you that you're a good Catholic. I can tell just from listening to you. So we get off the air, and Roy says, how did you feel about that? I said, I felt great. I said, this woman took me into her spiritual heart. My books, wow. Jacob the Baker, have all three of these books have been on the national bestsellers and have sold several million copies in Korea. This past year, my work won first prize at the European Intellectual Book Fair in Moscow. That ideas that connect with other people reach around the world is a reminder that we're connected around the world.
Yeah. I know that phrase will frustrate some, because there are those who say that all of my guests are saying exactly the same thing, that we're all one, that we're all connected. So my statement to them is, well, then don't you think there's a point there?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, there is some notion of, you know, the absurdity of reductionism, that we reduce everything to the simplest notion.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, when I talk to people about the role that prayer and faith plays in life, and they say, you know, and I talk about honesty and love, and they say, well, those are kind of simple issues. I say, well, if you think they're so simple, why do so many people have a difficult time getting to them? I mean, you know, it's just life. I can assure you that life is not as complicated as the games we make of it. That's where Fritz Perls used to call it. He didn't call it this, but he called it mind screwing. He had even more descriptive manner that was a little bit more emotionally charged. But when he talks about it, so I think that the philosopher's job is not to make difficult things to make simple things difficult, but to make a difficult thing simple. And if you think it's really easy to make things, to present ideas in a complicated ideas in a very available form, then try to do it. I can't tell you how often there was a line in one of these, Jacob the Baker book, where he says, it is the silence between the notes that makes the music. Mm-hmm. And they wrote me from Columbia University about 2 months ago that they were including this quote in a book they were doing, and on the subject of nothingness. And there you go. And they wondered if maybe that they had seen it someplace else. And I showed them the places where it was in several books of mine across the last 25 years. And I said, but if you think you've seen it someplace else, why don't you find that source for me and show me? And then 2 weeks later, they wrote me a note and said, We're inserting your quote in the book as the single source for it. So, that, you know, the mind is a very magnetic universe. So we do absorb other people's thoughts. But at the core, look, if people tell you that across the world that we care, that we're connected to each other, the distance between us is really a function of our blindness. Like my mind is that if I want to go in search of wisdom, I only have to go in search of my ignorance. If I want to go search of vision, I only have to go in search of my blindness. If I want to go in search of hearing great truths, I only have to be in pursuit of my deafness. So if I'm trying to find where I am deaf and blind and ignorant, then I have a pretty good chance that I might discover something. At the end of the day, my friends, at the end of the day, all God's children got wings. All God's children got wings. And we honor ourselves to the point we cannot honor others until we're prepared to honor ourselves. Our ability to love others is premised on about our ability to love ourselves. The golden rule, do not do unto others what you would not have them do unto you, is golden, mm-hmm. as long as you're not prepared to treat others with the same disrespect you have for yourself.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That is a very good point. And I'd love to elaborate on that, but we need to move forward a little bit here because I don't want to leave anything out before the program is over, and we'll try to get as much in as we can. By the way, if you're just joining us, this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. My guest is Noah Benchia, the author of The Journey to Greatness, as well as the PBS special, which, as you say, is going to be rebroadcast on the local PBS stations here in the month of June, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I don't know exactly where it's
going to
be.
Check your local listings.
In the market. It's playing in about 150 markets across the country and all through Canada as well.
One other question I want to have, I have for you specifically. You said, you know, from a blue collar family growing mm-hmm. up and so forth. So then what was that moment, that catalytic event that propelled you into this past 40 years?
Well, that's a great question. And because, you know, the nicest thing you can say about an egotist is they don't talk about others. So for me, I was the first person in my family that graduated from high school, let alone from university. And both my father and my mother, very early on, while they were kind about what they saw, certain gifts I had been given, intellectual gifts, as they played through at the university at some level, they were very, very determined that these were not gifts to squander by trying to get your face deeper down in the trough, that God did not give you these talents in order only to make you richer, more famous, that you have a higher calling and you have to honor that in your life. And I think I took that to heart, but I couldn't have articulated it when I was young because, first of all, it presumed that there was too much greatness out there in front of me, and I couldn't see that far. It was beyond my vision. A number of years back, I was in a hotel room with my wife around between Christmas and New Year's. My wife's from the East Bay Area, and we love the San Francisco. We go up there all the time. We're sitting in the hotel room, and it was a rainy night, and I could hear the cars down below, the cabs and the honking of horns, and PBS stations were playing the best shows from the previous year, and they had the great economic business guru Peter Drucker on the air. And they said, Mr. Drucker, you were the advisor to the chairman of GM and the chairman of GE, and what was the first question you always asked him? He said, I always asked him the same question, do you know what business you're in? And as soon as he posed that question, he said, I heard myself say to myself, Noah, that's a great question. Do you know what business you're in? And I thought back, I'm in the business of being a source of strength to others. whether I'm writing books or teaching at a university or being an executive advisor or giving a keynote address, or if I sat next to you on the airplane, my wife says, you want to go talk, you want Noah to come and talk to your company? It's going to cost you this many tens of thousands of dollars. But if you sit next to him on an airplane, he'll give it to you for free. I'm in the business of being a source of strength to others. I don't think that makes me a particularly great person. I do think it is the work the Lord gave me to do, and I'm trying to do it. Mm-hmm. And I get up. You know, sometimes we're someplace and people will come up to me and be very, very kind and grateful for how my work has impacted their life. And we came home and my wife said, well, how are you going to deal with this? I said, you know exactly how I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to get up at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning and I'm going to go downstairs and work because that's the work the Lord gave me to do. Mm. My father went to work every day when it's dark. I like to do the same. I feel blessed to have my work. And to come back on myself, you know, we're not expected to finish the work, but neither are we excused from it.
That's right. Most people know that for the first 15 years of my career, I worked for a religious station. And up until the age of 36, I was legally blind. So I had some of these folks who would come up to me and want to lay hands on me and heal me. And I know this sounds very strange, but I said thank you, but no thank you, because the purpose in my life is not to be healed. And that was one of the things that I found so extraordinary about some of the prayer programs. I heard over 15 years the same people calling up with the same ailments year after year after year. And that's really why that kind of got hammered home in my head was, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, regardless of how well I right. can see or hear or taste or smell. I'm doing what it is that I've been put here to do as far as I know right now.
Let's talk about that for a second, if we might, about people calling back with the same repeated ailment
yeah.
and the same repeated request. Look, a lot of people, if you imagine your life like a freeway of some kind, a lot of people take pride that they're in the fast lane.
Mm-hmm.
My comment is, the faster you move in life, the sooner your life's a blur. But a lot of people take pride they're in the fast lane. Even more people live their life in the past lane. When I say they live their life in the past lane, the best definition of neurosis is when we do something which is negative but familiar over something which is healthy but new. God only gave you two arms. If you're busy hugging the past, you can't embrace the future. You can't drive into the future staring in the rearview mirror. A lot of people spend a lot of their time in wound societies. Mm-hmm. They get together and they talk with each other about how they were mistreated or what went wrong, and all of these become an excuse to pick the scab so that you never move forward. You're living your life in the past lane. And it is such a profound sadness.
Yeah.
I would remind people, don't let the past kidnap your future.
Yeah.
Don't let the past kidnap your future.
I used to be able to use the analogy, as you've just described, of putting a movie into a videotape machine and watching the same movie over and over again, expecting a different ending.
The definition of insanity is just that.
Ah, but with today's modern technology, you now are dealing with DVDs. The only problem with the analogy now is it doesn't work the same because there are alternate endings on the same DVD. So well, that one doesn't quite work.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, to that point, oftentimes I have been asked, do you believe in reincarnation? I'm talking about alternate endings, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
I'm just going to step off into that metaphor.
I like that.
Somebody asked me, do you believe in reincarnation? And I said, I do. I just don't believe you have to die in order to be reincarnated.
I would agree.
I think that this lifetime is a perfect time to go through several incarnations, that we have an opportunity in this life to make of this life what you would make of it. Now, clearly, there are people who have been robbed of that opportunity by dictators and hate and fascism and poverty, people who just are so far outside of this realm. You know, we know that half the planet lives on less than $2 a day. So we know a lot of people are robbed of it. But for almost all of us in this realm, and certainly for all of us who are listening to this program, we have opportunities for alternative endings in our life. And again, I say, don't let the past kidnap your future. Don't let the past kidnap your future. The future. You know, there's a great quote that an army of sheep led by a lion will defeat an army of lions led by a sheep. You know, you just have to decide that you're going to put your faith and not your fears in charge. And when you get to that crevice, you're going to realize that prayer is a path where there is none, that God is never so with you. And when you feel alone, that we are all alone, but we are all alone together.
In talking about the journey to greatness, as we make the transition here,
yes.
What do you mean by greatness?
Well, that's that. You know, that's of course is where you have to begin. For a lot of us, we were raised to think that greatness is money and power, but we all know a lot of people who have both money and power and aren't that great. Mm-hmm. And we know a lot, and all of us know people with not much money and with very little power who are pretty damn great people. So certainly, we have to re-understand what the concept of greatness means. I don't think greatness, when I was a number of years back, I gave this talk at the Library of Congress, and the topic was about what constitutes civilization, but to some extent I can shift this and use greatness in the same way. I don't think that greatness is classical music, because Nazis were listening to classical music while they marched people to the death camps. Mm-hmm. I don't think that greatness is porcelain teacups, because Japanese generals during the Rape of Shanghai sat drinking tea. I tend to borrow from the scriptures that says that greatness and civilization is how you treat the widow and orphan in your society. What mm-hmm. does that mean? It means how people with power treat people without power. So from my perspective, greatness is how people with power treat people without power. Now, that doesn't mean that it's other-based. When we say people without power, it's how the person inside of you with power treats that person within you who feels absent of power. So to be responsible for watching over not only your best part, but your least part, and embracing those aspects of yourself which are less, and in knowing that in the embrace, they will become more, just as you will embrace a child, and in the embrace, remind the child that there is greatness within them. Again, our ability to influence others is premised on our ability to influence ourselves, and our ability to influence ourselves is premised on our ability to be honest, loving, and in a state of faith with ourselves. From there, we can do it with others. It doesn't work the other way around.
Yeah, I have to say that the things that you are sharing with us are, in one sense, they're not new, but they're put in the Noah Ben Shia format, if you will, for people to start to, I love the word, to grok from A Stranger in a Strange mm-hmm. Land, which, by the way, I still haven't finished. It's a rather large book, and I...
No, I think, again, let's do a little, you know, the jazz guys, so let me do a little riff off of that.
All
for
right.
you, okay? The James Baldwin's Stranger in a Strange Land, which was the best study of black consciousness that came out in the middle 50s. Curiously enough, James Baldwin's black consciousness was also stirred by his homosexual consciousness, which also made him a stranger in a strange land. Mm-hmm. But the title is taken directly from scripture, because when Moses, leading the children of Israel, and he reminds them that you will treat the stranger among you, in Hebrew the word is ger, you are to treat the stranger among you with respect, not as xenophobia, but the stranger among you with respect, because he says, I was a stranger in a strange land. When he had to flee the Pharaoh after slaying the taskmaster, mm-hmm. he winds up in Midian. When he's there, he says, I was a stranger in a strange land. So that's a great reminder that no matter how great you are, and if there's greatness within you, at some point you will feel like a stranger in a strange land. Everybody has felt alone. Everybody has felt like a minority. And the implication of that is to be empathetic to somebody else when they're in that position. And only when you've been there can you bring a real empathy, a real sense, in Yiddish there's a word called tam, a taste for it, a real taste for what does it mean to be a minority. And the interesting part of being a minority in a majority situation, which would be a stranger in a strange land, is the minority is always conscious of the majority culture. The majority is seldom conscious of the minority culture. So... Wait, that just plays out. It doesn't need a further... I sound too much like a pedant if I went on about this again, but there's a thought just to go off on that for a minute.
I want to open up the opportunity for people to pick up a copy of both the book as well as the DVD of the PBS special. I have one copy of each to the first two people who will email me. And it's based on the timestamp that I receive the emails at richard@richarddugan.com. That's Richard and the last name D-U-G-A-N. There's two D's in the whole process. richard@richarddugan.com. And I will make sure that you get a copy of, one person will get a copy of the DVD and one person a copy of the book. The Journey to Greatness.
You know, if I might, Richard, I would like to also invite people to come to my website, which is, cryptically enough, Noah, N-O-A-H, at Noah, N-O-A-H, Benshea, B-E-N-S-H-E-A.com. There are a lot of things there. You can see the 10 tips for tough times. I mean, that's not for sale. It's for free. So we're not trying to sell something here. Come and take a look. And there's some things there on the audio and the video line that might be interesting, and a trailer from the show. So I invite people to come and take a look.
And I've watched the public television special. And I just, again, as I was mentioning, I'm a kid of the cartoon era, Warner Brothers and all of this stuff. And so I loved the bright green, red, and blue doors.
Right.
They were so intriguing to me, and I want to kind of get into that. But first I want to ask, let's just go with the first step. What is the first step, as you see it, on that journey to greatness?
I think it's all beginnings are fragile, say the scholars. To me, nothing begins without intent. The journey to greatness begins simply with the intent that you want your life to be better. If you would like your life to be better, that's the first step in making it better. A conscious decision, I want my life to be better. That requires people to stop and say, you know what? I want things to be better. I want something in my life to be better. Now, it doesn't mean that you're, we're not looking for the big Hollywood end here. It isn't like suddenly all, people say to me, what do you want? And I say, well, how about if I was taller? I'm going to have this, going to have more hair. We're not talking about all this. It's making some aspect of your life better. Mm-hmm. There was a great story about a guy who weighed about 400 pounds who lost 250 pounds. They asked him, how did you lose all this weight? He said, well, I had a very simple operating principle. He said, I love hamburgers and french fries. I love them. The first day I took one french fry off the plate. The second day I took two french fries off the plate. Everything begins with intent. You know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step.
Mm-hmm.
That's so trite and so beat up and so true.
Yeah.
So I would say intent is the place to begin. People are listening and say, you tell me that my life will be better simply by me telling I want my life to be better. I'm saying, yes, brother. Yes, sister. I'm saying that to you.
You got to start somewhere.
Make that statement to yourself, and that is the first step.
Absolutely. Noah Benshea is my guest, and we're talking about the journey to greatness. Let's talk a little bit more about some of these wonderful 10 tips for tough times. Do what you can, but never forget that letting go is very different from giving up.
You know, we live in a, I'm assuming this is an invitation for me to now wax eloquent on how wise I am by this.
Absolutely.
What I mean by this. When you're young, you think success in life is everything you can grab, everything you can take hold of, everything you can own. Curious enough, as you get a little older, you begin to understand that success in life is what you don't need sometimes, what you can let go of. Mm. And that letting go is very different from giving up. Letting go means, I'll tell you a great story about it. In the book Zorba the Greek, Zorba is this, very sage, like a Jacob the Baker kind of character in his own way. And he says to Alan Bates, who's the boss in the movie, he says, boss, let me ask you a question. If there was a house on fire, right, and there was great paintings and a bird and all this stuff, what would you say first, boss? What would you say first? And boss, I don't know. Well, and Zorba said, I tell you what you save. You save the bird and let it go. You know, it seems to me that anybody who has ever been in love and feels that they can hold on to that love by stifling it or suffocating it or holding it so close are like people who try to pull the wings off of butterflies and in order to see how they work.
Couldn't said it better myself. I find it fascinating that you have written all of these books and put your sayings, if you will, on all these coffee cups and done these different programs and gone all over the place. And I would assume you have traveled the world.
Yes.
What are the differences that you have seen in the people in the other parts of the world, or in terms of what we're dealing with today and talking about today, in terms of the journey to greatness, are there any real differences between myself and, say, the people in Ireland or in Africa or Southeast Asia or China, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, first of all, let me come back and say I found myself feeling self-conscious about saying I've traveled the world. I have traveled a great deal. I turned 21 in Calcutta. That was my. I have been around the world. Have I traveled the whole world? No, I haven't traveled the whole world, and I can't imagine anybody who would ever feel at home if they could say that. I've lived in Santa Barbara for 35 years.
Sure.
I was born in Toronto. This is my home. I do travel a fair amount. Italy is a country I have a particular affection for, and I do spend some time there. And I took the time to try and learn Italian so I could communicate in a different rapport. The question is: are people the same around the world? No. People are never same around the world but I never meet the people because I don't meet 2 million people at a time. Mm-hmm. I tend to meet one person at a time. And when I meet one person at a time, oftentimes I'll find myself scratching my head and say, God, you know, I don't know how this guy showing me his wine cellar reminds me down in, you know, in Monforte and in Piedmonte area in Italy, reminds me of my Uncle Mo showing me the toys down in his garage, you know, but that's the take I get,
yeah.
Right? And that, and when I see, and I'm someplace and my father died of ALS and Lou Gehrig's disease. And about 5 years ago, they asked me if I would play the role as the national laureate for the ALS Association. So I do a lot of speaking. Mm-hmm. I write about this. It's on their website. And I have people connect with me who are going through terrible, terrible times. And I can tell you when I'm sitting there and some mother is pouring out her heart to me about her loss of her child to ALS, and I think of my mother who recently passed away telling me about her loss of her mother when she was 2 weeks old, I feel like it's sui generis in Latin, our kind. We're there. The humanity, when some people have tried to ask me why, my work might connect with people in different parts of the world. My answer is because if you scratch us, all of us bleed. And mm-hmm. what makes us all blood brothers and blood sisters is that we all bleed. There's mm-hmm. the bottom line. There's the bottom line to it. Are we all alike? No, because we got the best and the worst of us that's right here and the best and the worst of them and there and there and there and there. But is there... Can we find reasons to believe that other people are different and negative? Yeah, we can. But I think that it's what you choose to perceive in your life. There, I have seen the best, the most caring, the most connected aspect of myself in a lot of other folks around the world. Does that mean that everybody's great? No. But if some people I do know. That wisdom is more than enlightened despair. So I choose to move forward with hope and faith. I don't always think that makes you doesn't always bring you to a state that is positive. But I sure as hell know that if you move forward negatively and down on people and hard on people and mean to other people, that you bring out the worst in them.
Yeah. Now you have, and you know this as well as I do, just by virtue of the work that you do. Which is more than work for you, I'm sure. Mm. It's a labor of love as well. But you have touched the lives, the hearts, the minds of hundreds, thousands, if not millions of people. Mm. And so someone out there is probably saying, yes, I've read his book, this, so I've seen this program, I've listened to that program, I've seen the coffee cups, et cetera, et cetera. And the most profound and inspirational moment in my life was when I, da-da-da-da, is regarding Noah Benchia. Mm-hmm. What has been for you the most inspiring and profound moment in your life?
I'll tell you some that vie for it, okay? Because I couldn't stack them up. The moment my daughter was born and I saw her eyes. The moment my son was born and he grabbed my finger. The moment I shut my father's eyes when he died. The cool brow of my mother when I kissed her goodbye when she passed away at Cottage Hospital 5 months ago. And the guy who wrote me a letter telling me that he had ALS and he wanted to thank me for how much my work made a difference in his life. And I wrote him back and said, I'm so honored that you took the time that you wrote me. Like, you can't imagine how meaningful that is to me. And he wrote me back. He said, well, let me tell you how I'm writing this. He said, I'm on a ventilator and I have a stick in my mouth and I tap out the letters one letter at a time at a computer and then I can do it. And then I have to get back on the ventilator. And he sent me this note. And then I sent him a note back and said, now I'm crying. Now I'm crying. I think those are all pretty special moments in my life, including I just have a profound love affair with life. I have a profound love affair with life. I love living. I love my wife. I love my children. I love the work that God gave me to do. I feel so honored and so blessed and so much in a state of gratitude that I could not have been given these things because I'm a good guy. I think I'm a pretty good guy, but there's a lot of pretty good people out there. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just in a state of gratitude. The first time I went to the Wailing Wall in Israel and I saw all these notes stuck up on the wall and people said, this is the Wailing Wall. And I thought, I don't just cry because somebody told me it's the Wailing Wall. But I stood at the wall and I saw all these notes and I saw all the notes. And I thought of all the people across time that would have given their life to get there and just never got there because of the persecution or the history they had to fight against. And I thought, I was there. Somehow I was given that moment. Mm. And I started crying. And reminds me just how great life is. And for that, I am eternally grateful.
Well, thank you for that. We're going to take a break. I'm Richard Dugan with Noah Benchia here on Tell Me Your Story.
Have you lost direction in life? Do you constantly worry or give to others but deny your own heart? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Okay, it's time to play Name That Restaurant. Here are the clues. This mystery restaurant is located in Santa Barbara.
Well, that narrows it down to about 550.
This restaurant has indoor and outdoor seating.
Oh, now you're talking. There are only a couple of hundred restaurants that have outdoor seating.
Give up?
No, I'm looking at nippers.com. There are menus, recipes, the forum, restaurant news, and over 200 restaurant reviews written by professional food journalists.
Check out nippers.com, always serving up all the right answers about Santa Barbara restaurants.
Hi, I'm Chris Cullen.
And I'm Lisa Cullen.
Join us each week for Garden Gossip.
Get answers to your garden questions. Play Name That Plant. Hear the latest garden news, garden trivia, and in-depth guest interviews.
Garden Gossip, a breath of fresh airwaves.
Fridays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturday mornings at 11 on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Have you ever dreamed of being a travel journalist? Well, now you have a chance by making a video of your summer trip and submitting it to Around the World, the award-winning travel radio show. Just send in your video of 2.5 minutes or less, and the Around the World team will select winners to be aired on the show. Go to aroundtheworldradio.com for the rules and listen to Around the World every Thursday at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. and Saturdays at 10 a.m. for more information.
Take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean road, all the countries in our bones, all the trouble that you know empties out. you go. Oh, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my very best to understand you.
This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan with my very special guest, Noah Benchia. It's been a pleasure to have you on the program today.
Thanks,
and to share this hour. And our listeners can certainly hear this program again up on our website. It'll be there available shortly after the program is over. And I know it'll also be available either on your website or through it, one way or the other. We'll link it and get it available to people.
Invite people to come to noahbenchia.com.
Absolutely. That's noahbenchia.com, and the link will be on our website to get to your website as well. That's what I tell people. They say, you don't have a whole lot on your website. I said, I don't need a lot on my website. I send you to my guests. That's where the information is. So we are certainly grateful. Before we wrap up the program, I'd like to ask this final question of each one of my guests, because it's really extraordinary, the choices that we can make in our lives, as this program is all about. The directions that we can go, as what you talk about, the journey to greatness, we can go in a lot of different directions to be great. You could have done a lot of other things in your life. You know, you could have stayed in that blue-collar environment and maybe worked in a factory for all we know. But you're doing this. Why?
Well, you know, I've no one's ever really asked me that question. Why are you doing this? I tell you, I don't... I certainly found myself asking God a number of times. I mean, I remember years ago walking down the street and saying, you know, thank you, God, for all these gifts. Now, can you tell me what the hell I'm supposed to do with this? Before I was trying to find faith, I can assure you that I never sort of envisioned that I was going to be this, you know, this poet philosopher with some sort of international reputation that connected to people around the world. But I am deeply grateful that it's come into my life. I shared just before the break about my love of life, and nothing seemed wiser to me in finding my way than gravitating toward what felt good. And I feel good when what I'm doing makes a difference in people's lives. I just, it's just the simple logic of it to me that if I, you know, at a certain point in my life, I found that I felt better when I was a loving, honest person of faith. That doesn't always mean that I was. It doesn't mean I didn't make mistakes. I'm not above doing that. I've got my struggles. I got my stuff just like everybody else on this planet. I'm not above it. But the fact that I'm not above it means that the struggle is just as real for me as it is for you. Whoever you're listening to this, we all got our stuff. Mm-hmm. All God's chillin's got wings, but you know, all God's chillin' got stuff too. Not to borrow it from George Carlin. So I really just try to gravitate to what made me feel good, and what made me feel good is remembering what my parents reminded me that my life should be more than just the collection of goodies and fame, and so I feel grateful. I couldn't have imagined this, I don't know. I shared with people one time. I was being interviewed one time, and the person who was interviewing me was a journalist, but had never didn't achieve some of the fame that he might have hoped for in his life. And my heart reached out for him, and I said, "Let me share a story with you." I said, "You know, think of your life as like, remember when you were a kid and you'd be out running with some friends and you'd be chasing through the day, and without knowing it, you'd run through a piece of sidewalk that just been laid, and you come home and you're sitting there that night, and your father comes home and says, 'Okay, so what did you do? Anything happen today?' And you say, 'No.' And as you say 'No,' the cement is drying on the bottom of your tennis shoes, and you've left a footprint someplace that you have no idea that you've left. The smallest stone dropped in the largest sea will send circles on the shores we will never know. Of all the things you can make in life, folks, remember your life makes a difference."
I've got 10 seconds. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Love to Lal. Have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you next Saturday at 3:00.